Blog Talk Radio.
And the economic fury they create. And we want to leave you with a statement. And this statement came from a resistor in the Netherlands, of all places, during World War II. And what this resistor to the Nazis said was, having a protest isn't the same as translating it into relevant action. So without further ado, we're going to turn the mic over to someone and to a lot of people on this program who know the difference between protest and action. And we're going to start off with one of the first. Brother Ralph, are you in the house?
Yes, I'm in the house. I hope you can hear me clearly.
Yes, we can.
This net neutrality becomes very real when you're in a place that with small populations that do not get the same services as those places with large populations where money can be made by internet companies on their services. But what I believe, the overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our laborers for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, move lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have taken lynching outside again. The lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. And because the lives of our heroes and sheroes who once protected us in our community do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Wake up, now is the time. Now, as you all know, our evening discussion is the sound and the fury. And each hour it grows. But as political people, we have to understand and disseminate, separate that which is real from the nonsense. And so the sound, we have Mr. Trump and his Trumpocalypse taking the cover off of what was always there, and we just didn't notice it. It's always been there. It is always here. It is called racism. And the ridiculous sounds he's making about going to Korea, well, let's get straight about that. That is just a cover for his other problems. Recognize that if one bomb were to drop, it would destroy the international economy. They've been working on creating one economy as a weapon of imperialism for the last 50 years. International, Mr. Obama pushed international economics. Mr. Clinton pushed NAFTA, all of these international trade agreements where, and I must say at this time, where poor people are disenfranchised everywhere. I always say the genius of these treaties, economic treaties, were that they oppressed the poor on either side of any border that you were looking at. And so we have an international economic system, and it would come to a halt with the first bomb that is thrown. And so therefore, those people who are in it to make money, as America was based on making money, let's be clear about that. There was never democracy. There was never a government for the people, of the people, and by the people. Those are just words that we hope to work towards. And so there was never democracy. There was never capitalism. The thing that the rich, you know, are worried most about is not communism, but real capitalism. There is capitalism, but it certainly isn't in America. We are nowhere near it. And so those people who call themselves capitalists are opposed to war. That's just a nonsense. Things to take our minds off of what's real. But let's get to some of the things. We always talk on this program about sadness, how bad it is, but something good has happened this past week. As our dear sister Lynn said the night of the election, she says, I'm going to bed. It doesn't matter who's going to be president. And if Trump becomes president, at least we'll have a target because Obama took our target away. He was insurance against people of color rising up. And so now we have what Muhammad Ali had started many years ago, Hell No, I Won't Go. And one of the things I heard today, very rarely do you hear it in the major media, in his own words, when he explained why he wasn't going to war, to go thousands of miles away to oppress people of color around the world. He was very clear. He didn't use the words that we use, anti-imperialist. He just was anti-imperialist. Hell no, I ain't going to go. And it resounded around the world. And he was hated by most America. But sticking by his guns, he became the most visible, the most recognizable person on the planet He stuck to his guns and he won. And I see the legacy of Muhammad Ali with these young athletes around the world taking the knee. He has single-handedly changed the nature of athletes being able to speak out, willing to speak out on issues. Now, that doesn't solve the problem. But what it does is it gives us heart to see that there are people paying attention. And Mr. Trump went too far with his sound and outrageous fury. And it brought down the fury. And Kaepernick, Harry Edwards, the young men who stood and put their fist in the air wearing a black glove. What was that, 1968, 67? I don't even know the year. But everybody knows the symbol.
Edwards, the Olympics.
Yes, at the Olympics. Everybody knows that symbol. Everybody
All right,
knows.
Brother Ralph. I'm going to cut you off because we got a long list and we'll come back.
Short?
Yes.
Okie doke. It's looking good.
Yes.
We are waking up. And we want to awaken people to the issue of our political prisoners. But Sister Betty, you have the controls.
I'll get back to you, Brother Ralph. What we're saying is we want to be able to give people a taste of what
and
they're going to get.
My friend Larry Pinkney, folks, you have not heard of the fiery, passionate, gentle, and well-read legal defenses that Lynn Stewart, as a true people's lawyer, has provided for members of the Black Panther Party, the Black Liberation Army, the Weather Underground, the May 19th Communist Organization, American protesters, at the presence in New York of the U.S.-backed South African apartheid government's rugby team, Muslims unjustly targeted by U.S. authorities, and certainly neither last nor least for her enormously successful defense of black, of African-American Larry Davis against the racist police brutality of the New York City Police Department. And never far away, of course, was her husband, Ralph Poynter, providing Lynn with inspiration, crucial case research and logistical data, which ensured the best and most effective legal defense possible for those who were being defended by Lynn. Ralph Poynter came out of a highly politicized black American family in Pittsburgh, PA, where the name of Paul Robeson, among others, was revered. Ralph's father was a union organizer and worked in the steel mills. At the tender age of five, Ralph's father began taking him to union meetings. The horrible social and economic inequities of white racism in America was something Ralph Poynter directly learned about while growing up at home. And at one point, he and Lynn came together in the struggle on behalf of young people and students here in New York City and forged a union. And Ralph was there to greet Lynn and receive her home once she was released just days ago from prison. And we all have been fighting for that and demanding that. Joining us now, Lynn Stewart and her husband, Ralph Poynter. Lynn and Ralph, God bless you both. How are you?
Well, why? It's easy to tell. I'm very well indeed. You know, the contrast to where I was a week ago and where I am now is just so remarkable. And so, I can't. There's no description for this.
Yeah.
You know, you go through a totally regulated, miserable, loveless situation. And I come home to my family, my friends, my political community, and I am just so loved and so uplifted. I could use words for a half hour.
Well, that's wonderful, Greg. And Ralph, I know you're elated to have her home.
Let me tell you, as I once said, I'm better than I have been in 4 years.
Mm.
That's the time I've been served in jail. 49 months, I think.
Wow, wow. And just to hear the two, you both sound so good and so strong. You know, I can't imagine that you've been through a hard time or a difficult time, or even, Lynn, God bless you, we're all aware of what you're facing with your health. First of all, how are you feeling? How is that?
Well, I have, you know, effects.
All right, folks, I just want to give you a taste of what we're going to be doing on October 6th. There's more to this tape. We will be airing the rest of it maybe at the end of this evening. But I wanted to give a shout-out to the next brother that we're going to introduce. He is responsible for organizing this interview, and he is one of the major players, along with several other people on the call tonight, who helped to bring Lynn Stewart home. And I am referring to our next speaker, Larry Pinkney.
Well, sister, thank you so very much. As always, I'm not going to take up a lot of time because I know there are other people who need to speak. I'm so elated, you know, that I had the opportunity to play a small part along with many others to bring our sister, dear sister, Lynn Stewart home, back to where she belonged, okay? I want to begin by saying, as I always say, we must free our political prisoners. Free them all. Free them now. Free them all. Free them now. And as I said, I'm not going to belabor this because I know there are other people who want to come on. Let me say this. Brother Ralph was indicating, he was talking about some athletes, and I'm talking about back in the day, all right? And what he was referring to was 1968 in Mexico City. And he was referring specifically to John Carlos and Tommy Smith.
Yes. Yes.
All right? And the reality is that our consciousness, that is to say our political consciousness, was very, very strong then. These two brothers, one of whom I actually knew, who went to San Jose State, at that time I was in California in the Black Panther Party. The point is that these brothers understood the political, economic, and social significance of what they were doing. They were not on their knees. They were standing tall, and they were speaking in a strong, forceful, and articulate fashion. This is what we need today. And while I certainly want to concur with those youngsters out there, and they are youngsters, and that's not to take anything away from them, because at the time in 1968, John Carlos and Tommy Smith were also youngsters, but they'd done their homework. They studied. They knew their history. And this is what all of us must do. We must understand that history is a continuum. It is not a set of dates and places. It is a continuum. And we're all involved and engaged in this continuum. Now, having said that, I'm going to close by simply saying that one of our strong continuums as a part of history is to free our political prisoners. What does that really mean? It means we have to educate our brothers and sisters, our sisters and brothers, about the reality of our political prisoners in the United States, in the U.S., in this country. So I'm going to end here by simply saying, free our political prisoners. Do what we must do. That means educate, organize, okay? Educate, organize, and let people know what that really means. Those are just words to some people. We need to really explain what that means. So we need to educate, educate, and educate. All right, so that's it for what I have to say. Thank you so much.
We'll be hearing more from you.
May I have a word in here, Sister Betty?
Yes, Betty.
There were three young men on that Olympic stage who raised their hands, their fists in defiance. And we must always remember the possibilities of organizing. When you stand to tell the truth, all of those who respect the truth will stand with you. The young gentleman from Australia has been all but forgotten, except by the enemies. He paid a price for his joining with his black brothers in that protest. I'm out.
You're absolutely correct, Ralph. You're absolutely correct, and I was remiss in not mentioning this brother from Australia, and he did pay a very, very heavy price. I'm sorry, I had to interject. Thank you.
It's interesting, though, that on another note, we're going to now go to somebody who has also paid a very, very heavy price, and we're going to we announced the event coming up October 6th. That's why we played that tape of Len coming home. We'll hear more of it. October 6th, Friday, at St. Mark's Theater on St. Mark's Place on the East Village in Manhattan, New York. From the doors open at 6, and we're going to make them kick us out at 10. But I'd like to go to another event that you can go to this coming weekend, Saturday, from 4 to 6. And it's at 147 West 24th Street at the International Action Center. Is a reception for a political prisoner that has, like Jalil Montekin, freed himself along with the community assisting him. And I'm speaking of none other than Reverend Pinckney. I think he's the only one to go to jail for a successful referendum and recall of a corrupt black misleadership class Negro mayor. Reverend Pinckney, your mic is open.
Thank you so much. You know, I'm excited today. I'm excited to see those National Football League players to get educated, because for years they have been silent. And I remember when I was in prison, LeBron James had made the statement that he wasn't supporting Kaepernick about his stand, and I wrote him a letter, and unfortunately he didn't write me back. But I'm excited. See, Kaepernick he's my hero, and what I see now, they trying to tell us is about the flag, but it could be about the flag, because that flag is bloody. You know, when do you want me to put my hand over my heart for the over 5 million Native Americans who were slaughtered by the United States Army? Do you want me to put my hand over that? Or do you want me to put my hand over my heart for slavery that was constructed? Or do you want me to put my hand over my heart for the lynching that have taken place during that period of time with nobody going to prison? Or do you want me to put my hand over my heart for this country backing ISIS and the Taliban? When do you want me to put my hand over my heart and say this is a wonderful country with all the rotten, dirty things that they have done, especially the black people? But it's, to me, just to see the National Football League and Steph Curry. You see, LeBron would never spoke out if the attack went on Steph Curry, in which I am applauding. I'm applauding these guys, because these are millionaires who can now start really giving back to the community in a different way, where you can build up our own community. We have to start building up our community and stop depending on these white folks to give us what we need. We don't need them. What we need to do is go inside our community and keep that dollar circulating. And I believe we can do it. I'm excited today. I'm excited to hear about these people standing up that never stood up. If they want to say it's about the flag, I don't care. To me, you know, you're not saying nothing. You know, you're not saying a word, because that flag is about as bloody as you can get, you know. And that's what we have to tell them. We have to tell the truth. See, a lot of times, see, we as black folks, we're intimidated by these folks. They come out and saying, oh, it's all about you disrespect my flag. The flag has disrespected itself, you see. As a matter of fact, that red stands for blood. And they still continue doing the same thing they've been doing for years and years and years, and we sit back and do nothing. All we have to do is unify. You see, because this thing going to get ugly. It's going to get a lot different. We think it's going to be all right. White supremacy, you like LeBron said, you got a bomb in the White House. Now, who in the world going to sit here and call somebody, the president of the United States, a bomb? And he's a real bomb. And a liar, a cheat, and a white supremacist, he is. But we have to tell him. It's time that we took a stand and start fighting together, standing together, and doing what needs to be done. I'm excited today, Betty, and I just want to say to you and Ralph and Larry and all the rest of them, you know, I love y'all, and I really appreciate y'all. You know, you've been there for me, and I need it. You know, I need it because I'm at war. This, you know, I don't look at this as no conflict. This is the real deal. And I might become a casualty again. But the point is, I'm going to go down fighting. I can tell you that much. You know, and I'm going to be fighting for the people. What about Reverend Edward Pinckney?
All right, Reverend Pinckney. Once again, I want people to understand that Reverend Pinckney was arrested for alleged vote fraud. And what that really means is he successfully recalled a corrupt black mayor of the Democratic Party who promised to end corruption in Benton Harbor and then proceeded to dig his hands into the gravy bowl. So we want people to come out on this coming Saturday, September 30th, from 4 to 6, and make it an all-day thing because you know we're naming a street after Elambe Brass from 11 to 1 at 125th Street and Adam Clayton Barrow. So you need to come out for that and then come on downtown for Reverend Pinckney. Once again, the International Solidarity Center, 147 West 24th Street between 6th and 7th Avenue. And we thank Reverend Pinckney and recognize that we fought to get our heroes out. We fought to protect Reverend Pinckney. We fought to get Lynn out so she could have a few more years with her grandchildren. And we were successful. And what we are saying tonight is having a protest isn't the same thing as translating it into relevant action. And what Brother Larry Pinckney is saying, educate, 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 and you will know what relevant action is. So without further ado, we're going to go to our next speaker who understands what relevant action is, and he says it in the form of a poem. And Reverend Pinckney, we'll be there at the airport to pick you up and take you to your family in Manhattan on Friday. We're looking forward to seeing you, my brother.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
All right. Okay, Reverend Matt Turner, your mic is open. Brother Ralph, did you want to give a salute to Brother Pinckney? Reverend Pinckney.
Well, I'm going to see. I've been saluting Brother Pinckney for many a moon out in Benton Harbor at his trial, and it is in Detroit and Chicago, all over. I've been with Reverend Pinckney, and so I'm going to see Reverend Pinckney Friday. There's nothing for me to say on this phone except love to have you. Let us continue.
Well, there must be something with that name Pinckney, because between Larry Pinckney and Reverend Pinckney, the system should just give up its fascism. Because they're both hitting a 1-2 punch. Brother Matt Turner, your mic is open, and Sister Ann Lamb and Brother Tariq are waiting in the wings. Glad you made it, Ann. Sorry you always have
to
come work straight here, but we're always glad when you can make it. Brother Matt Turner, we're waiting to hear from you. And, folks, you'll hear this, brother, at October 6th, Saturday evening, from 6 to 10.
This piece is called Orange Julius Caesars the UN. Sulfur swept into a world body like cholera from fecal forces. Peacekeepers poisoning proud 80 waters, killing over 10,000, trumping the rule of law. Sulfur disguised as an orange piece of pyrite, prancing like a peacock, twerking its ugly red, white, and blue ass, swept into a world body, acting out as a Cat 5 hurricane, threatening crimes against peace, crimes against humanity, war crimes of unspeakable proportions, bringing to mind a disgraced Negro general waving his little vial for war. Neighbors south of Orange Julius are simultaneously suffering a 7.0 earthquake as his homeland, cities, and islands are battered by serial hurricanes and PTSD. Homes, knee-high piles of splinters, lives like mold, dreams, 155-mile-per-hour shards of glass. And Boss Tweet, the mobbed-up Mussolini impersonator, threatens to rain fire and fury on others?
Wow. Right on.
I keep requesting a repeat. They're so full. These poems are so filled with political education that makes you think. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. We're going to have to sponsor a night of Matt Turner to hear all of those wonderful poems that he has presented on this program right in New York City. Keep that in mind, Brother Matt. This is just amazing. Thanks again, and back to you, Sister Betty.
All right. We want to go to Sister Ann because we know she just came from work, and then we're going to go to Brother Tariq. We're glad to have him back. We missed him.
Yeah.
But I want to remind you about Reverend Pinckney. You know, he was also convicted because he quoted Deuteronomy 28:15-29 unjustly against.
Excuse me.
The statement was published in the People's Tribune, a national newspaper in Chicago, and a judge accused him of threatening him. And I said to myself, well, if you feel threatened by God, although I'm not religious, then that ought to tell you something. But, yeah, Brother Pinckney, you got to run for office, Brother Pinckney. You just got to do it. So, folks, come out this coming Saturday for Reverend Pinckney's reception. Come out for Brother Matt Turner. Let's go to Sister Ann Lamb, and she's going to be one of our presenters as well. We hope you'll come out and hear her. Sister Ann, your mic is open. I'll catch your breath and take it away.
Hey, Sister Betty, Brother Ralph, everybody. It's always an honor to be on your show. I saw our friend Robert Seth Hayes on Sunday. He sends regards to everybody. You know, he had recently had another one of these things with the dropping in the sugars, so it was a little scary. But he's okay. But there are some ongoing problems with this lovely pump monitor thing, and I think the problems are being caused by DOCS personnel. They never ordered the subcutaneous sensor that would enable the monitor to actually be able to read his blood sugars. So Dr. Wolf, the facility doctor, we might want to put that in quotes, now says we probably will not have it until mid-October. Now, as we know, they've been telling Seth for months how they're going to phase in the monitor. Well, they can't phase in the monitor because they don't have the part that makes the monitor work. They also claim that there's some kind of glitch inside this pump. But despite the fact that they claim there's some kind of glitch inside this pump, which they probably caused to happen in the first place, they are still using it. So this is, you know, a little update from Seth. He's holding off on doing any campaign at the moment because he thinks everybody should focus on Herman Bell. That's the way our prisoners are. You know, they look out for each other, and he's very concerned about Herman. The only update I have on Herman Bell is that he did see an ophthalmologist on Friday. I don't know what the results of that were, but I talked with Laura Whitehorn, and she said, yes, he did see an ophthalmologist, which they were more concerned about than anything else because of the situation with his eyes still being so red and everything. And he has headaches, and the headaches could be from the eye because he can't really see out of it. So, you know, it's hard to know which is the problem. We have making a list now to go visit Herman because he's in SHU. He can only have one visit a week and so on and so forth. Now, we're still asking people to write to Annucci and write to Cuomo. That means you just have to write one letter. You write one letter and you change the heading. One of them you address to Annucci and you CC Cuomo. And the other one you address to Cuomo and you CC Annucci. I think that would be a good idea. You can either go to Free Herman Bell or nycjericho.org. We also have the same information on our page. I would advise people to go to Free Herman Bell because he has a gorgeous, gorgeous website and there's a lot of information on it about him. You can watch videos. You can read some of his blogs. It's freehermanbell.org. And the same information is there about the sample letter and everything. Take the sample letter. Don't just sign your name to it. Try to, write in some of your own words. But we're still having the same demands that these charges against him be dropped because they're totally ridiculous. That the CEOs who assaulted him be fired. No longer have jobs because they're not supposed to be doing this to prisoners. This guy, CEO Jay Saunders, that they mentioned, or Jay Saunder, he definitely has history. I Googled him and got like two other cases of prisoners who had been beaten by him and his crew. So, he's a known bad element. And they, of course, have allowed him to stay there because they like fascist CEOs who beat up prisoners and almost kill them. That is exactly what they are really all about, as we well know. Also heard from Jaleel, who's very concerned also about Herman. Jaleel sends regards to everybody. He's very happy to know that we are proceeding forward with his international initiative. I told him today in a letter I will be, discussing this on October 6th. It will be part of my little presentation. And I just did a threefold about it, which I sent in to him because I want him to look at it first and make sure it's okay. So that's where we are at the moment. I also want to say, people, don't forget, even though we don't mention Jan all the time, Jan is still being in the SHU in Tucson. People still need to write and call the Western Regional BOP. Apparently, the reason that he's still in the SHU and they haven't yet moved him to a CMU is because people have been writing and calling. So now they have to sort of think about it. Oh, maybe we can't get away with this. Uh-huh. And he does have a lawyer, who's arguing the whole First Amendment rights issue. So we'll see where it goes from there. But I really encourage people not only to do that, but also write to Jan. Write to Herman. They're both in the SHU. They have, nothing to do except sit and stare at walls, write them letters. Tell them what you're doing. Send them a card, with a nice scenery on it or something. I heard that Herman likes science fiction. Go to Amazon.com and send him a science fiction book. Hopefully it won't be one he already read. Anything like that is such a big help when you're in that situation. Because, you're sitting in the hole. They want to call it the special housing unit. Make it sound like it's something nice, huh? And you really have, all this time to really have just time without any, diversion, without any exercise, without any seeing the outside world. Or any of that. So, it's really important for people to take the time, just a little time, buy a nice card, a nice get-well card for Herman. Buy a nice funny card for Jan. Write them a brief letter, especially Jan. They're really playing with his mail. So, if they see consistently a lot of people are writing, some of it is going to actually get to Jan. So I think that's really important for people to do. And, we will continue because we are not stopping until all our political prisoners are home with us because we need them with us because we need their leadership. We need their analysis. We need them to help out here to build a movement to overthrow this horrible fascist system. And until we do that, nothing is ever going to change for the masses of people in this horrible country whose flag, as a brother said earlier, is totally drenched in blood.
Thank you, Sister Ann. Ralph, your mic is open.
Yes, I wanted to say wonderful, wonderful listening to our brothers and sisters talk about the reality of America. And two things. I would ask you at the end of the program, please give us more information or repeat the information you did about the Brother Alambé Brath celebration on 125th Street. I think he was one of our, what would you say, he was one of our forecasters of the future. He was one of the originals to speak about Africa and the African culture, to give us what was the information as to what was happening in Africa at the moment. He's so invaluable and to our history and to our knowledge about this long-term struggle. And I go back to what I was talking about is Larry Pinkney had mentioned, gave us the detail, 1968 Mexico City, and the wonderful thing that while we have to remember not only what happened in the past, but what can happen in the future. Now, while these young men had their gloved fist in the air, the heavyweight champion to be was raising the American flag in his hand. And he was, I despised George Foreman for many years until people were attacking the young man who was a great fighter, but who was destroyed as a person, Mike Tyson. And when people were attacking him, George Foreman said, give him a chance. He's young. He doesn't understand much. Take me. He says, I had three wives and threw away millions before I understand. And he says, so he forgive him. He has time to learn. So anyone with that type of compassion can say, listen, I too was stupid, but, you know, I learned. And so when we talk about changing things, we have to recognize that people sometimes need to be prodded, not once, not twice, but three times. But when we do the prodding and when we are successful, and I use Muhammad Ali as the prime example of that, being reviled by most of the nation. But in the end, the most recognizable and loved person on the planet. That tells us something about the power of truth. That tells us something about the power of resistance. And it also tells us something about redemption. We have to somehow redeem, if possible, those liberal forces in America, those people who say the right thing but do the wrong thing. And I remember once in a discussion I had with Lynn Stewart, I says, what do you think of those people who use the movement, the black movement, for their own purposes? Do they know what they're doing? Do they know the catastrophic results of what they're doing? And Lynn says, of course they know what they're doing. The reason you can tell that they know what they're doing is because they always say the right thing while doing the wrong thing. Those political pimps that we call politicians, they know exactly what they're doing. And we always have that in our midst. We have liberals saying the right thing, but today as we speak, the political prisoner issue is not a part of the national agenda. How is that? And Blue Spirit said, how so many people who spend so much of their time talking about human rights are so willing to give up their most basic human right, that is the right of self-defense.
Absolutely.
Well, that's a question. That's a question. And these brothers who took up arms against the sea of troubles, as we heard in Shakespeare.
Right.
We ignore them. And so what does that say about the rest? Okay, Sister Betty is giving me the hook one more time, and so I'll have to
move on, okay? We'll come back
okay.
to you. All right, Brother Tariq, we're going open up your mic, because, like I said, we've missed you for 2 weeks, and we've got Brother Tom waiting in the wings. We've got to get to him, and I want to get back to the tape that Larry Pinkney interviewed, along with Ralph and Lynn and Dick Gregory and Ralph Shulman. Okay, Brother Tariq, your mic is open, and once again we're saying sound and the fury, the sound of lying politicians and the economic fury they create.
Okay, the sound and the fury. I'm Tariq. Peace, Brother Ralph. Peace, Sister Betty. Peace to the audience. I'm Tariq. I'm a Black Panther. I'm a former member of the Black Liberation Army. I'm glad you talked about the sound and the fury. That comes from a whim Shakespeare quotation, and it reads, life is a tale told by an idiot. It is full of sound and fury, but it signifies nothing. And that's appropriate today because of this discussion that the politicians, particularly Donald Trump, is having regarding the brothers protesting and brothers and other persons protesting, kneeling during the playing of the national anthem. By Donald Trump saying that these persons are disrespecting the flag, he is taking the discussion down to the nothing end of the discussion spectrum. He is like sending us in the wrong direction. He is providing the audience with a diversion. Go down and talk about the flag, and not talk about Freddie Gray, not talk about Mike Brown, and not talk about Eric Gardner. So he's telling us, let's talk about disrespecting the flag. He's taking us down the ridiculous end of the discussion spectrum, and we got to be clear about that. That's like trick number 17 used by the CIA, the psych ops people, because he is not saying what he want to say, like people be saying, he says what he want to say. He says what they tell him to say. And that's trick number 17 that the CIA use. Anytime we have a serious discussion about a significant matter, they want to take the discussion down to the ridiculous end of the discussion spectrum. So the discussion is about those players being on their knees, and they want people to ask, why are those players protesting? And then they will have to get into a discussion about Mike Brown laying on the ground for 4 hours before they moved him so that people could see him and become disheartened and terrorized. And they can discuss Eric Gardner pleading for his life 11 times, and the guy continued to choke him. And they are told not to use that chokehold because of the great possibility that it could result in unnecessary death. So Trump don't want to discuss that. He want to take the discussion down the ridiculous end. So we got to know that it's appropriate that we talk about the sound and the fury when we talk about them in regard to that discussion. And of course, when we talk about a discussion with Trump on the other issues of him talking about destroying North Korea and using to destroy the totally destroyed North Korea, he would have to use nuclear bombs, and that's not going to happen because Russia has indicated that they are allies of North Korea, and they have indicated that by way of flying a squadron of nuclear bombers around the whole of Korea and then telling America that they were the ally of Korea. And as you know, in regard to Korea, when during the Korean War, China actually sent troops to aid the Koreans during the Korean War, so they are the allies. So nothing is really going to happen. But Trump is talking. He's doing a sound and theory thing because basically he's just telling these people here, white races here, that he is the personification of them. He is a bellicose person. He is an argumentative person just like them, and that's what's going on with that. So we want to be mindful of those things in terms of the sound and the theory, and that is basically that captures it quite succinctly in terms of what is going on with Donald Trump. Now, regarding Alambre Graff, I'm glad they're going to have a street naming after him. He has done a very significant thing in terms of leading the campaign to take us black people back to being African people by promoting our hair and promoting our dress. He led that campaign. I told him, Alambre, if you hadn't done nothing else, once you led that campaign to re-Africanize us, you didn't have to do nothing else, and I love you for that. But Fidel thought of Alambre so highly, he asked him to be on the first plane going to Africa and when he sent the troops over there. And Alambre came back and held one of his forums. And at the forum, he talked about the Battle of Kuta Carnival that took place in Angola, where our forces defeated NATO. See, our people don't even know. In Vietnam, we defeated NATO. We defeated all of them. In Africa and Angola, we defeated NATO. And that's what our people have to know. We don't have to bow down to these people. We keep defeating them. And what people don't act like they don't even see, we are defeating them. Of course, in Africa, they didn't win their economic independence because the colonizers, they still have a stranglehold on world economics. But we defeated them on the battlefield, and we got to know that. So I just want to say that about Alambre. Thank you for giving me a few minutes. Peace, y'all.
Education.
That is what it's about. Sister Betty, go ahead.
All right, Brother Tom.
Sister Betty.
Yes. Oops. Yes, can you hear me? Okay. I'm sorry. I think your announcer has made a mistake. It's Joel. Joel, your mic is open.
Yes, hello?
Yes, I'm sorry, Joel. I said Tom, a psychological slip. I meant you. Thank you for being on this evening. You're another one we missed. Glad to have you back.
Well, I'm a little bit taken up with other things for the last 2 weeks, but I'm glad to be back and glad again to hear the voices that I missed who are really shining a certain light on what's going on that doesn't get shown in many places these days. So I think that the consciousness is tremendously moving forward. I was very impressed by the way in which the entire sports world came together
and
expressed solidarity across many of the barrier lines in reaction to the blunderbuss Donald Trump, who tried to insult everybody from every angle he could think of. And I guess they think that, oh, he's president, we just have to take it, but it didn't work that way at all. And it's very exciting to see how many people, more than for a long time now, are able to see through what's going on and are applying tremendous pressure to rein in the fascistic tendencies that have recently emerged, especially given, I especially like that remark where one of the players said it used to be great honor to be invited to the White House until you showed up. Although the first part of that is a little bit too conciliatory to the system, I think, because it was always whatever president we had, even though they were less provocative and directly insulting in their pronouncements, it was never really an honor because it's just the major international crime scene, the White House. And it's a fraud on the people around the world and especially a fraud on the American people, that people can still believe that we live in some kind of a democratic republic and that we have anything that's really a president. Everything is a hollow fraud today, and more people are seeing through it, and I think that it's not long off when there's going to be a lot more action developing around the more advanced consciousness, not just commenting upon it, analyzing it, reacting to it, but real action is, I think, about to break out because things have just gone too far to be painted over. And nothing is really improving for anyone of any social significance. As he expressed a few weeks ago, he can't even promise jobs or health care. Can't even promise it. I mean, all they're doing is promising to take more of it away. So I'm hopeful that the consciousness that's been aroused is going to burst into the kind of action that can really make a difference. That is something really leading up to a revolution.
All right, Joel. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you calling in. And I like what you said about the role of the athletes in this struggle. And it really brings to mind what Larry Pinkney said. Educate. Ralph, before we go back to the tape, do you have a few words you want to say?
Yes, in following what everyone has already said, the sound is out there on both sides, but Kaepernick is not working. When he takes the field, it will be a step in the right direction. What has happened is it shows a sign that we are waking up. No more. As Joel said, there are no jobs. There's no economy except for the rich. Black people are still being killed every 28 hours. Our children are still being miseducated and denied education. Our political prisoners are still in jail. We're beginning to wake up. Let's recognize this is the beginning, and let us make the beginning into something real, something tangible, something that you can put your finger on. And this program and the people on it are dedicated to the proposition of freeing those who fought for freedom and who deserve freedom, and their families who deserve to welcome them home. And the other day, I was going through pictures, memorabilia, which we don't need memorabilia. We need action. But one of the memorabilias of the action to bring Lynn home was a map of love that Larry Pinkney's wife had put together. And I just, you know, the basic map was purloined in TR years ago, when the people there love Lynn so that they held on to the map. And I think of the flooding. The original map is in PR, and I hope it brings hope to people there who recognize the struggle that was waged. And my copy is just a copy. I was looking at it and saying, thank you to all of those who supported my personal political prisoner, Tim Stewart. Thank you,
yes,
and good night, everyone.
Saturday, 11.
Good night, Sister Betty. Good night, brother.
Reverend Pinckney's reception from 4 to 6. Alumbe's street naming will be on 125th Street and Adam Clayton Powell Boulevard in Harlem, 11 to 1 this Saturday, September 30th, and then hop a bus and go down to 147 West 24th Street for Reverend Pinckney's reception. Thank you, everybody, and good night.